Welcome to Listening to Paint Dry, a podcast about the art and hobby of miniature painting. I'm Dev.
And I'm Mike. Thank you for joining us on our continued quest to become better, braver, happier painters.
And today, we are joined by the wonderful PK Asher.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us. We were really excited. I know when Dev was at Nova last year and I was at ReaperCon, he was like, make sure you talk to PK, make sure you talk. And I kept trying to go over, but you're incredibly popular. and I'm incredibly terrible with time management. So that never kind of worked out, but I did get a chance to see your lovely artwork at ReaperCon. It was beautiful. Last year, I think I spent more time last year in not 23, 22, looking around your booth. It was very nice. I very much enjoyed it.
So it's superhero origin story time. I mean, you're an artist whose work has kind of graced the covers of various like Reaper things, Dark Sword miniatures in particular. But what got you into miniature painting?
What got me into miniature painting was I had a job at a comic shop. And I was not able to afford, do you remember the little crystal adorned wizard pewter figures? They were just little tchotchke things. Well, this particular comic shop sold those novelties. And so my salary wasn't enough. I was being paid under the table. It was a sketch job at first. So I agreed to paint some Gretchen for the showcase, even though I had never done this before in my life. That was my first foray into it. And I mean, they were terrible little three color things done with apple barrel paints. And something still clicked that I'm like, this is fun. This is a neat thing to do. So I went from there to I started playing in Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, and my GM wanted me to paint up Heinrich Kemmler. So that was one of my first GW pieces I ever did. And it was around that time that I discovered the Golden Demons and Games Day in general, back when it was a big, like, 3-day affair. And the second I saw my first Golden Demon competition, I think Todd Swanson was there that year. I knew that this could be more than just gaming quality slapping paint on. And so I set myself immediately to the pursuit of trying to get better.
Nice, nice. These are the days when it was still being held in Baltimore, right?
Yes, Baltimore, Chicago, and Atlanta, but Baltimore was my stomping grounds.
Yeah. I remember Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay fondly. I've not managed to get a game to the table in years because nobody seems to want to play it anymore. But
it's such a good game.
It is. I love the fact that everybody sucks and is going to die a horrible death without it being a Lovecraftian mythos. It's kind of refreshing to me.
You know, it's interesting that you say that. I love hearing how artists that we look up to started by looking up to other artists. You know what I mean? Like, it's just always interesting that. So you had Todd Swanson there. You know, like for me, it was Roman Laplatte at the Nova Open when I first was dabbling into actually what painting was. And so, yeah, it's amazing to me that. How much of an impact that you may not even realize you have, because I'm sure there are plenty of people out there that have seen your work and gone, oh, I want to do that. You know, I'm sure you have inspired many. Not only that, you had a Dark Sword tutorial video, right? And so when I first got back into mini painting, that was one of the first things I saw, because I took a, I'm going to say 30 year brain or something like that. You've taken 9 years. I took 30. Yeah, I mean, it was one of the, when I started Googling miniature painting, that was one of the first things I saw was your video, from Dark Sword. Which I think is actually still for sale on Dark Sword's site.
I believe that it is. If you want to watch paint dry and hear me not really talk a whole heck of a lot. Yeah, I highly recommend it. Plus, you're guaranteed for the most awkward interview segments humanly possible. So,
there's that. We already know our listeners love listening to Paint Dry. So, you know, maybe watching a little Paint Dry will help. Sorry, dad joke. I can't, you know, I can't
help go for it.
All right. So, you know, one of the questions Steph has on here is, what is the highlight of your miniature painting career?
A little bit of a toss up for me.
We'll take multiple.
I think the first piece that felt like a highlight of my miniature painting career was absolutely Danse Macabre. And that was the first time I had entered the Crystal Brush. And I remember walking in to hand my piece in that year, and I'm passing it over to Jen Haley, and I see in the cabinet Kirill's piece, and I went, well, the pressure's off. I'm not going to win Best in Show. That's actually a wonderful thing. So when I took third place that year and was so honored to be standing there with Kirill and Roman, I was standing among giants and felt so small and so honored to be in that select group. And that piece then later went on to win at World Expo in Chicago. The year it was here in the States, took a gold in fantasy, which was just fantastic. But the other for me is when I did a piece that no one knows, not even Miniac recognized it as mine, called Self-Portrait of the Artist, where for me it was a chance to create a deeply intimate and personal portrait of art as opposed to something that could be marketable or sold.
Very nice. Very nice. Yeah, that's, I mean, that's awesome. I mean, standing between with Roman and Kirill, you know?
Yeah.
On the same platform, you know, like that's to dream a little dream, right? That's awesome. Belated congratulations on that, because that is just an amazing, and the piece is gorgeous, because I've seen it several times. Because I always constantly look at the old Crystal Brush entries and stuff. Was that the same year as the Kirill Space Marine that looks like Roger Craig? Yeah, that was a Roger Craig. And right. Yep.
That was in the showcase, and I went, no, I'm not winning. That's fine. Okay, great. My piece wasn't even done yet. I finished it up in the hotel room. Like, so that was, you know, that's my MO, is I always finish my competition pieces while on site for the show.
I cannot critique you on that. I can't.
I was just going to say, you're talking to the wrong person if you want that to be unexpected. I've shared a room with this man and watched him just stay up all night trying to finish off pieces for ReaperCon. So yeah, I've witnessed it.
And I subscribe to the Roman Laplatte theory that there is no such thing as a finished project, only those that we abandon.
That's correct. Yes. You go, it's good enough. We're done.
Right.
So, I know, you know, you've kind of stepped away from miniature painting and you're coming back in again. But during that time away, you kind of transitioned into much more traditional media. You've got some stunning watercolors available and prints of those available. What kind of led to that shift away from the miniature painting world into a more traditional art world?
It was a twofold series of events that happened, I think, within 6 months of each other. The first was that I had attended what was then my last Gen Con. I did seven Gen Cons and worked every single one of them. I did 3 years with Malifaux, and I did 4 years with Dark Sword. And then in between that, taught classes and, you know, volunteered up at MHE for judging the painting competition. I was painting, I think at the time, between 60 and 80 studio models a year, which was soul crushing just in the weight of it. I mean, I was putting in 16 hours a day painting models just to meet deadlines. And then the other thing that happened just the next month is I taught a painting class in Sacramento, and Seth Seth Amsden, Hobby Sensei, was taking my class. And I'm like, this is one of those moments where I'm like, I don't even know why you're here, but thank you. Flattered. And when I started showing Seth my approach to how I handle acrylic paints, I was not aware that Seth had a prior background in 2D and traditional mediums. And he said, "You're a watercolorist." And I said, "I have no idea what you're talking about. I've never touched watercolor paint in my life." And he said, no, you're a watercolorist. So I got back home from that workshop that I taught, and I bought an introductory set of watercolor, and it was like love at first brush stroke. I had no idea what I was doing, but there was just so much joy that filled me with, that the burnout from miniatures no longer did. So I just stopped painting minis and went, I'm going to pursue this, you know, come hell or high water.
So this leads me to another question, because this is a debate that we've had on this show a while back, and I keep meaning to put it to the test.
Mm-hmm.
Have you actually painted miniatures with straight up watercolors before?
I have attempted to.
Okay. So tell me more, because we were talking about this as a possibility, especially with, you know, the increasing awareness in miniature painting, once again, of oils and enamels, which blows my mind, because like that predated acrylics in my mind, but it's kind of come back. And so, you know, we were like, well, what other avenues are there? Inks, well, that's pretty common these days. Mm-hmm. Watercolors. Okay, so this seems like a really bad idea. Now, I mean, there's also like a couple different types of watercolors. So what was it you tried?
I work with Daniel Smith watercolor pigment. So it's all of their pigments are, you know, pure, and they're great. The vibrancy is amazing. The saturation, the light fastness. But the difficulty that I had was not realizing, and this was early on with me playing around with watercolor, not realizing that for watercolor to actually maintain any of its true properties, the ability to lift or to granulate, you need a cotton-based substrate. So if you want to paint watercolor on a miniature, you're going to need to work in a much larger scale than 32 millimeter, because you're going to need to paint it with watercolor ground first. There are paint on cotton substrates. So you could prime a model with watercolor ground. You'd say you have a 72 or 75 mil bust and make it work. It's never going to have a smooth texture, but you could really wind up with some very interesting things. But watercolor on primer does not work. It just beads. It's sad.
Okay.
Now, the only thing I've seen successful was back in the day, Les Bursley had done weathering with watercolors. Which
you can do weathering with watercolor pencil is much easier.
Right. Well, I don't know if the watercolor pencils were known back in those days. Yeah, but it was the same process as doing an oil wash, and then you use a Q-tip to take off the watercolor that you don't want there, and then you varnish the miniature. So
I could actually see that working as a weathering agent. Yeah, I just in my very brief trial with it, I didn't get a lot of coverage, and I think that maybe as an additional tool on top of acrylic, it could be interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting too. You know, this is probably a good. You're probably on top of this one too, because there's some colors that are originally created watercolor that did not translate well to acrylics. Like originally Winsor Newton created Day's Gray, or is it Davy's Gray? Davy's Gray, which to me is a perfect warm white shading color, but the acrylic version the coverage is worse than watercolor coverage. I mean, it's really god awful.
I have both the Winsor Newton Davy's Gray in watercolor and oil. Love that color so much.
I got to try the oil, because I only have it. I have it in watercolor and acrylic, and I've tried doing using it to panel line, but like you said, it beads a lot. Yeah. I got to try that. I didn't realize there was an oil version, because that actually could work out really. Yeah, that's one of my favorite watercolor colors. Is Davy's Gray.
Yep. And it is, it's exclusively a Winsor Newton color. So, yeah.
Right. All right. So now that we've talked about the transition to traditional media, Dev told me that you've started back in to the world of miniature painting a bit.
I have.
Okay. So my question with that is, are there things from the two-dimensional world that you have learned or would like to try in the miniature painting world?
The thing that I learned the most was that I went into watercolor painting having absolutely no idea what genuine grasp of color theory meant, how to color mix, how to no longer necessarily pay attention to the label on a tube. There was no, like, for Reaper, I would had Clouded Sea and Old West Rose, and these were my fallbacks and my standard colors. And then when you approach watercolor, you just have largely artistic colors. Same thing with oil. Like, there's burnt sienna or, you know, Quinn magenta or phthalo green blue shade. You learn the color mixing. So now that when I've gone back to miniature painting, I'm not using my old recipes at all. My formulas are out the window. Like, no, those no longer matter. It's all about color freedom and color choice and free mixing, and it's okay if things don't match perfectly.
So kind of a follow-up with that. Now, would you see yourself then leading? I apologize, Dev. I'm on a roll. would you see yourself then? Are you back at model paints, or have you, like, did you keep along the artistic line, or are you using more like heavy body acrylics or?
So right now I'm actually working with these scale tube acrylics. Mm.
A hybrid between the two.
I like the high pigmentation. Most of all, I appreciate the really matte finish that they have. Also, I couldn't afford the Chimera colors, or else I would have tried those.
Well, you know, and it's that's an interesting, I don't know, because we actually last week we just interviewed Francesco Ferravi. I have one Chimera paint. I bought an orange a while ago. And I actually, I have a hard time working with them. And it's a skill. It's totally a skill thing. I even took a 7-hour class where we exclusively used those. And I was like, I just don't even know how these work.
I'm curious as to why, before I like buy any. What what were your difficulties?
So it was there was unexpected results, and probably because I'm so dependent on model paints. I'm not used to when you take a pure pigment and add white to it, the impact of it, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
And so, that inconsistency, I paint really thin. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I am one of those weirdos that 25 glazes is cathartic to me. I enjoy doing that.
So you're a watercolorist.
Maybe. And so I'm not used to that type of consistency of paint. Now there are a lot. I see why people love them. I mean, they're vibrant. I mean, there's a whole bunch of, this is total user error on my part, not a critique of them. And like, I liked almost all of the scale 75 artist ones, except for the flesh ones, which just turned really super chalky on me really fast.
Yeah. I don't use those.
Yeah. And so, yeah. And I ventured into like a good mix between the two of worlds for me is the acrylic gouache. Mm-hmm. And the Liquitex So Flat series. Mm-hmm. Those two artistic sides I can really work with. But I guess when you start getting into the thicker paints and the purer pigments is where I kind of struggle.
Well, then, if I may make a recommendation to you, in regards to if you're still very much into those, like, 1,000 washes brings you catharsis type deal, or 1,000 glazes, Golden soft body acrylics. They come in sets. I would recommend the modern color theory set. beautiful, wonderful, vibrant. They are great for glazing.
I apologize. You might see me on my phone, but I'm sending myself a note.
I literally just did the same thing because I'm a big fan of the Golden Heavy Body acrylics. I may have taken one too many classes with Matt DiPietro and now just a disciple of Heavy Body acrylics. And so for me, the Chimera paints are too thin out of the bottle for me to work with, because I start thinning them down and then I'm like stuck. And they have all the properties of real, you know, single pigment paints, right? So they don't have that great coverage that you expect from model paints. And so I get myself stuck. So I'm gonna try those golden out and see how they go. I've seen bottles of them. I've been tempted in the past. I've never quite picked them up.
Well, that's the golden fluid. You want the golden soft body.
Oh, I see them. Yep. Yep.
Yeah, and they're not, it's not, I'm one of those people that every paint line has its value, you know what I mean? And I try to stick to more color than paint line. And so, yeah, like, I mean, I totally see why people love the Chimera paints and the Scale 70 Farber Artistic Tubes, et cetera. You know, it's just one of those, you gotta find your mojo, right? And, yeah. I mean, I don't use Army Painter paints, and I'm not really excited about their Fanatics line either. It's not, I don't need to try a new set of, you know what I'm saying?
You know? I've never been a fan of the Army Painter range in general. And I know that when the Reaper Pathfinder series came out, I wound up with a demo set of the entire line, and I couldn't find a single color I liked. And I went, I think I'm just over this particular paint line.
Yeah. Well, then it's changed. Yeah. I mean, it's changed because now it's not Anne driving the paints anymore.
No, it's not.
I mean, also there comes a point when you're painting to get very specific results and you want that control over the pigments included that you're never going to be able to get from a, you know, traditional hobby paint line, which, you know, mixing paints is going to cause a lot of desaturation, a lot of muddiness, a lot of grays coming in. And you know, I love having a good range of Army Painter or whatever for bashing out a commission, being able to get that consistency. You know, if the client comes back and they're wanting the same models painted, or, you know, a new set of models painted in the same scheme, consistency in that regard is great. But for the fine control, it does suffer.
Absolutely. Well, then, you know what? We're talking about paints. I'm going to throw this in there. Let's talk about paintbrushes.
Okay.
Do you usually we ask this in a kind of a lightning round format, but we'll do this a little bit differently. So you're stuck on a desert island, and you're only allowed one paintbrush, one size, one company, you know, it's just one paintbrush. What is it?
It's a Rosemary and Company Series 33 size 0, always.
There we go. Rosemary and Company. I can't lie. They're on my brush rack. That's it. But this, maybe I am a watercolorist because I actually prefer the Series 8 over the Series 33.
Yeah. Well, I started using them for miniature painting, in my defense. Mm-hmm. And then I went, well, you know, watercolor, yay.
Right. Deb, you're a big rose. The British side of you makes you have to go get the rosemary.
I mean, I am literally taken to smuggling them back with me every time I go back to see my parents because they are incredibly hard to find over here. And I do love them so much.
I have a mule who shall not be named that brings me rosemary.
Nice. Well, Wind River Arts. I love Wind River Arts. Is like an old school, like, you got to call them, tell them what you want. They take your credit card number. And I believe her name is Mary. She'll talk your ear off about miniature painting because she doesn't know anything about it. But all these miniature painters keep calling her, and it's a lovely experience, actually. But because she's the one who recommended the Series 8 to me, because they have like a needle sharp point on them.
Oh, yeah.
I can't ever remember. Is the 8 the one with the wider belly, or is it the 33 that has the wide belly? The 8 has the wider belly.
The 8 is closer. It's sharper, but it's closer. So the 33s are close to the Winsor & Newton Series 7. The 8s are closer to the Raphael 8404s.
Yeah, that is true.
With a kind of a better point than the Raphael. I still actually like the Raphael brushes, but the point, and I've actually found my freehand is better with a looser, less stiff brush like a 33 than with using the 8 instead of the 33. Mm-hmm. Some people like the stiff action with freehand. I kind of like the flow of it. I don't know.
Yep.
The weirdo.
But I know the Rosemary & Co.'s have a quite small sizes, so a size 0 for Rosemary & Co. really is quite small. Mm-hmm. Is that just from the way you came into painting to go for that smaller size brush?
It really is. I many, many years ago for the Golden Demons, I painted the Forge World Slaanesh Demon Prince with a size 3/0 brush. The whole thing.
The viewers can't see the eyebrows on both Deb and I.
I didn't know any better, and I thought the tinier the brush, the better the control. I wished I'd had a size 0 back then.
That model you could use like a house paint brush on to paint base coat, though.
I would have started, I think, at this point, if I were doing that model again, I'd have at least started with a size 3 to save myself some base coat trouble.
Now, do you use an airbrush at all, or are you a strictly brush person?
I will sometimes use airbrushing. About 6 months ago, no, I guess it's been about a year ago, I painted an army for a friend, and for that, now, Dev, you were taking note of the golden high flow acrylics in the bottles. Those are amazing in the airbrush. Just dump them in the airbrush and go. So I do use an airbrush if I'm going to be doing like large scale commissions where I want like unified light sources and need quick base coats, or it's a huge model where I'm like, I can't paint these wings by hand, forget it, or at least not the base coat layers of it. But largely brush. And right now, I mean, I live in California. Real estate is at a premium, especially in regards to my studio. So I don't even have space right now for an airbrush setup, even if I wanted to use one.
Nice. Yeah, I totally get it. The brush is just a much more personal experience to me.
It really is. You can kind of tell when you look at a model and you go, "Ooh, that's like 85% airbrush," and yeah, it's butter smooth, but it loses a lot of personality.
Yeah, I agree. It's hard to impart personality with an airbrush. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Right, and it seems now there's kind of a reverse in the process now. Like a lot of times, people start with the base coat, and then all the intermediates brush work, and then there's some final touches with an airbrush. I know that's like the Sergio Calvo method, and I've seen a couple other artists that do that as well, too. Mm-hmm. It's just that final, you know, I don't know. I can never get, if I press the button on my airbrush, the same amount of air comes out no matter how hard I press down. So I'm like, I don't know how these people are doing these final touch little, just puff, 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 puff. Look at my finger. And I'm like, no, that's just awkward.
I'm never very good with an airbrush to begin with. So for me, it's all the way down, all the way back, go.
Oh yeah, fire hosing.
Pretty much.
Nice. Excellent.
Ionizing paint in the air, you know, it's a glorious thing.
And see, my problem is my aim is bad, and so I would do that and I'd look, well, shit, there's nothing on the model. Oh, look at the wall. That's so pretty.
or your hand. God, my hand is a lovely shade of green.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I think, you know, kind of, I think we've talked about this in the past in conversations at ReaperCon. And I know you've mentioned it elsewhere as well. There is a problematic depiction of female figures in the hobby. And it's not universal, but it is pretty present. And I feel, unfortunately, the advent of STL files has exacerbated it. I don't know if you agree, but...
Oh, yes.
Yeah. There are some folks who are trying to tackle it. I know Annie at Bad Squiddo is one of them, but like, how do you feel like we can actually start addressing this, rectifying this, embracing Rembrandt's perspective of a beautiful body?
Well, I know that there are, while I can't think of any right now to save my life, I know that there are some miniature sculptors out there, and they're predominantly traditional sculptors that don't depict the female form with these plasticine breasts and, you know, wasp waists and thighs for days. Pinup has its place, but that's not how every female form needs to look or how every female figure needs to look. I think that in order for there to be a true change, and it's a sad reality, is that people need to stop buying them. I used to go to a lot of anime conventions, and seeing the amount of hentai depictions of anime characters, I don't think that this is something that can be easily shifted in the cultural paradigm, that people are going to want that kind of lurid, distasteful, over-sexualized model. And we can vote with our dollar and, you know, support people like Bad Squiddo that are producing models that are appropriately clothed and don't have that Barbie figure or, you know, the Kardashian figure. I'm not going to lie. I own a hopeless amount of Kingdom Death models, but for me, those are like comically kitschy.
I'm sorry. A naked witch sitting on a pumpkin filled with penises is not kitschy. That is like art. That's art. Come on.
I remember I bought the model grandmother because I went, this figure is so beautiful. And then I got the model and I assembled the model and went, and there's a penis. Grandmother has a penis. I did not realize this when I bought this figure. they're so different and weird, and I like them for their oddities. And not everything that Adam Poots does is lurid. He has quite a few serious pieces and pieces that actually just verge on 100% artistry. They're not all pinups.
When I saw the nursemaid, I think I couldn't figure out what it was, like for like a half an hour. And I'm like, I don't even understand what I'm looking at. And then I was kind of like, oh, like something went off in my head. Like, who came up with that? And are they in therapy? You know, like,
I had so many requests from people wanting me to paint the wet nurse, and I declined single one of them. I just couldn't bring myself to paint that model. That's one where I'm like, that's a bridge too far for me.
So, you know, it's interesting. You know, it's always an interesting conversation about the depiction in modeling. It's a representation issue that, the same way, you know, all of a sudden Warhammer started having black Stormcast, you know, and female Stormcast, although most of that is lacking from the 40K side, but, you know, the Age of Sigmar side, all of them. Now, every part of the Stormcast army has some form of diversification. So it feels like they only had, like GW only half heard the cry from out there. But it's interesting. I cannot find it for the life of me, but there is a sculptor who did this Viking woman bathing. And she has a total Rubenesque figure. It's absolutely one of the most beautiful models I've seen. It's sold, I was waiting for it to pre-order, and it sold out before I'm not fast enough. But
that proves there's a market for it though.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's interesting, too, is I feel like while the dollar is important, I think, you know, it's kind of like we're seeing like kind of a little bit of a mirror in like, you know, the NFL. There's not, you know, most of the players for the NFL are African-American, and you have a severe lack of African-American head coaches and African-American quarterbacks, et cetera, kind of the leaders of the team. But in areas like, you know, we have Shoshi, who's doing her model line. That's kind of, it's got like producing dad bods, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm on the other side of this. I'm like, God, I really don't want to paint myself. So, you know, give me somebody in a suit of armor, please. But so I feel like as we get more female owned businesses in the model world, that'll help too. I don't know, maybe more female sculptors. Cause I'm also a big fan of Africa Mur, who's a Chimera artist as well. And she does a lot of, different depictions of females that are amazing as well. And so,
I mean, could you imagine like a line of miniatures that are taken from like Ruben or like just classical art pieces and like trying to recreate what the masters have painted on similar physical forms, but in three dimension? It would be insane.
Oh, I would absolutely lose my mind if there were a line of pre-Raphaelite miniatures. So yeah, I mean, June in Flame would be like the hottest selling miniature ever. If you're not familiar with the painting, look it up. It's amazing. I had the privilege of seeing that at the Met last year.
Nice. So Gollum Miniatures has done multiple Kickstarter campaigns with, let's see. I bought Flora, which I don't know if you can. They did a three-dimensional model of Flora. Can you see our cameras, PK?
I can.
Okay, yeah. So that I have
that's
that.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous. This is another one they did.
I was totally unaware of these, and they're phenomenal.
I'm pulling them up right now. Are they all gone?
The Lemuses as well.
Yeah, it's called. Well, there's four or five Lemuses. Yeah. That they did, because I adored it. I've got a few of them. I actually sent one to Vince Venturella to paint, and it was an Orientalism painting. I know that's got like the stigma of the romanticized Middle Eastern, you know, white slave girl thing going on, but still, it's a part of the art history. And so they did a whole, but there's a woman on a horse as well.
Oh, Godiva. Yes.
Is it Godiva? Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. They did Godiva. So they've done a whole like line of taking two dimensional into the three dimensional world. And they're gorgeous. Like the Flora model is stunning. It's the only model I've never had to do a single piece of work on, like as far as no gap filling, no mold line. Like this is an insanity.
Well, Lascave Blanche is absolutely amazing. That's a beautiful figure too. Thank you for turning me onto this line. Wow. I was unfamiliar and they're gorgeous.
Well, I'm hoping I get to see you paint one. I can sit in model cases and on Instagram and paint and putty for hours, just ogling people's work. So, I learn a ton from it. I used to be one of those people like, oh, I'm going to break my brushes. That's so good. But now I've kind of learned how to look at people's work to be inspired instead of fearful and not jealous, for the lack of a better word, but kinda. Yeah, I don't know if that makes any sense, but
no, it absolutely makes sense. I had hit a point in my career where I was at an Adepticon and Sergio was going to have one of his classes, And I said, I would love to take one of your classes. And Sergio looked at me and he goes, I know your work. I would not be able to teach you. And I went, what do you mean you wouldn't be able to teach me? He goes, you would not be able to learn to paint the way that I paint because of the way that you paint. And I'm like, I'm crushed. Ah! So it was a very humbling experience because I've looked up to Sergio's work for so long. And I don't believe that he meant it as an insult so much as we come from very different approaches to painting models, or at least I came from a very different approach at that time.
That's disappointing to hear, because even if you don't paint the same way, you can glean and learning people's experiences also, I think, is part of the artistic journey too. So I don't know. That's disappointing to me to hear that.
I mean, seeing as we've been talking about models and working for a largely audio audience by spending a good amount of time Googling new miniatures, if I said paint a model, what's the first model that comes to mind? What is the thing that you're currently hankering to paint?
Henrietta the War Chicken.
Mighty fine choice.
Followed closely by Tea Party.
That's, I don't know Henrietta the War Chicken, but the Tea Party is a gorgeous model.
They're both Ignis, so.
I had literally picked up a copy of Tea Party for you, and I didn't think I was going to be able to get it to you, and I ended up selling it to someone else, and I'm really kicking myself now because I had a copy for you.
I do have a copy of Tea Party.
Okay. Well, I'm relieved then. It is a stunning piece, and I've seen so many good renditions of it.
But yeah, Henrietta is a 55-millimeter tall wizard chicken with a sword, also by Ignis. That's just so whimsical and fun.
All right, I'm Googling it now because I've never seen it before. Oh, the guard chicken. No, yeah. That's not it. That's whatchamacallit. That's a book.
Yeah, it's just Henrietta Ignis art. Just search for that and you'll find it. It's a surprisingly big chicken.
Yes.
Well, that's And Warhammer thought they were awesome with their goose.
Yeah, I mean, and Conquest with their angry chickens, but
we're not going down that story. I've seen it. I've seen what Dan's doing with it. And knowing that our third co-host will never listen to this episode, I can...
Hey, Mike, you're on the losing side of this one, because I am also currently painting up a pair of angry chickens. So
nice.
I think you need to get it and paint it up as well, just so that we've got the whole family have painted angry chickens.
It's not available anymore, is it?
It is if you go to conventions, I think.
Okay.
If not, I'll bug Daryl and get you one.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
I have to say, I'm so excited that you chose Ignis, because I'm not one for display pieces very often. Mm-hmm. And I think Ignis really comes through with sculpts that actually excite me to paint them at that scale. And they're one of the few studios that come out with that kind of work. And it's consistent. Like every single piece they do kind of makes you stop and take a second look.
Yeah, and even if they're not just doing whimsical pieces like Tea Party or Henrietta, the delving into Slavic legend is just, those are beautiful, beautiful pieces. So huge amount of respect for that sculpting team and that the art that they draw from.
We actually have a club, the club that David Powell was a part of, a meeting I went to, one of the old historical painters. We have a little show and tell time period of whether it was models you painted or, you know, stuff that you've bought that you want to share. And I guess one of the older historical guys who had never painted anything fantasy basically went on and bought one of every, like, as I, they were listed in a as a company that did, you know, amazing fantasy models, and a presentation I did for them. And he went on and was like, I'm hooked on Ignis. I've bought every model that's available on
Oh my goodness.
And he brought it, like, basically brought in this box of all this stuff. And I'm like, you know, okay, I should be getting a commission off that, but you know.
Got to get those referral links set up, man.
Yeah, they're gorgeous models. So let me ask you this. Is there something that draws you to a model in particular? Like, what are there things that catch your eye?
The first, usually the studio paint job is something that will at first catch my eye. I'll either go, ew, or ooh. But then I spend more time looking at the, if they're 3D sculpts or if they have the unpainted versions. I like to look at a model and see if I can find a mood for that model that isn't being currently represented. Can I turn something that is presented as happy as sad, or something that is presented as a wintry model in some other seasonal feel? I like to be able to work with, I don't want to paint inside the lines. I like to be able to work my own personality and my own artistic vision into a piece. So I really look for that when I am purchasing my models, and I'm very particular about what models I pick up because I don't paint them nearly as frequently anymore.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Nice. Is there something that hasn't been made yet that you'd like to see made as far as a model goes? Did I just steal your question, Deb?
No, I was just waiting. I was wondering how long it would be before you asked it. That's all.
It's a standard question.
I mean, in what capacity? Because there's always room for more models.
So a lot of times what an example I give is I would love to see the Dark Tower, Stephen King Dark Tower main quartet characters done.
Gotcha.
And so, like, originally I had said the Silverhawks, and then Sam Lenz in an interview said, yeah, type in Quicksilver as an STL dude. And I did, and I had bought it within 10 seconds after him saying it, and sent it to a friend to print. So I love Thundercats, but Silverhawks is my jam. And I apologize if you hear that background beat. That would be my Rhodesian Ridgeback, who is playing the leg of the dining room table. Thanks, buddy.
Oh my gosh. You know, I'm sitting here and I have a stuffed animal plague doctor staring at me, and I go, I need a line of plague doctors. I need, like, seriously well done, like, in a procession, plague doctors, maybe like carrying a stretcher or a cart of the dead or dying. I would love a vignette like that. Because I'm a little dark.
If you listen to this podcast, you know you're barking up my alley. I love me some plague doctors, and I'm always on the lookout for plague doc. And I actually have not purchased a plague doctor model yet because I haven't found one I liked.
The closest I think there ever was I think Smog did something very similar to that back in the day. But you can't find the old Smog 54 mil resins, like, I mean, without paying a small fortune for them. So.
Yeah, no, plague doctor. Barking right up my tree there. Love me some plague doctors. You know, and it's funny because I've always struggled. So I went through and read all through, like, the whole plague doctor outfit, what's behind it and stuff. And one of the biggest challenges to me would be trying to figure out how to represent the fact that their clothes were coated with suet. Mm. And like, would you make it shiny? Is that what, like, would it be that, would you almost have to go for like an NMM effect on their clothing in order to kind of represent that, you know, they were
basically greased up.
I think that would have to depend on how you approach miniatures, whether you're a purist or a stickler rather for the NMM, or whether you're just okay with putting a satin coat over your model. That actually is a very valid point in regards to how you would portray or depict the clothing. If you haven't read A Journal of the Plague Years, which is a true it is an actual journal from, well, the Black Plague. Highly recommend for some really depressing historical fiction. I was strangely enough reading that just before COVID hit. Yay.
Timing is everything.
Yeah, it really is.
All right. Well, that is going to go on my Amazon list. I'm driving 12 hours to Chicago with the other co-host on the show, and I'm going to need something to read. I know I said I was going to save the latest Vampire Hunter D omnibus for it, but I lied and I've been reading it. I'm weak when it comes to Vampire Hunter D. I'm sorry.
Well, that's fine. As Yoshitaka Amano has long been an influence for me as far as artists go. So
that's my big piece when I'm done after Adepticon. That's all I'm painting is I have the D model of my dreams. And so everything else is going on hold. And if that's all I get done between that and the Nova Open, then so be it. I'm going to be a happy camper.
I know you've been doing a few shows here and there. Have you got any shows that are coming up that you want to kind of throw out there to the listeners?
Well, if you're local to the Sacramento area, my next show is actually going to be at the Queer-Owned Business Market in Stockton on April 26th. And honestly, beyond that, for the remainder of the year, the only show I tentatively have on the board is ReaperCon. So.
Awesome. Well, hopefully we'll get some listeners to ReaperCon and they'll check out what you have there. And Stockton, if they're in California.
Yeah.
And I am not doing ReaperCon this year, sadly. Aww. And it's no longer, usually my wife has a trip, but she's been postponing it. But now, stupid teenagers in college. My daughter wants to go to a Northeastern school and they go back on the 28th of August, which is day one of ReaperCon. So
yeah,
that kind of eliminates the possibility of that. I mean, such is life, but you know, only have to drop her off one time. Then the mom can handle it, you know, the next 3 years afterwards.
So PK, the motto of the podcast is better, braver, happier. What tips would you give our listeners as they try and pursue that goal?
To not be intimidated by the work of what your heroes are doing, to be inspired by it, to allow yourself to take in that artistry and go, I don't want to recreate what they're doing, but it makes me want to do my own thing. Like, that's... Yeah, stop trying to chase being like other artists and be your own artist. Be true to yourself. If your favorite color is hot pink and every model you paint has to have hot pink, then do that, you know? So.
I think that's a wonderful sentiment. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, PK, why don't you tell our listeners where to find you?
On Instagram, you can find me at the PK Paints, on Facebook, The Art of PK Asher, and my website is remnantsofme.com.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show with us. It's really, you know, it's interesting. It's always amazing to meet one of your hobby heroes from the very beginning. And so I appreciate your time, and I love your traditional miniature painting and your watercolor work and other art forms as well.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's been a long time since I've done one of these, and it's been an absolute pleasure. So thank you both.
thanks for joining us. It's been great.
Thank you so much for listening.
A special shout out to our Patreons. Thank you very much for your support. And if all you others are inclined to do so, we'd love to have you as a Patreon also. Check out our link tree in the show notes for all our quick links.
Email us at listeningtopaintdry@gmail.com. Tell us what you're working on or what cons you've been to or how you're doing. We'd love to hear from you. Also, you can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at listeningtopaintdry.
We're also on X at Dry Listening.
Like, subscribe, or follow us wherever you get your podcast. If you could also leave us a good review, we'd appreciate that.
We'll be back soon with another riveting episode of Listening to Paint Dry.
Listening to Paint Dry with Mike and Dan is a production of LTPTWMD. All rights reserved. No portion of this recording may be used without the express written consent of the host. The music is Death by a Thousand Questions by Springtide. Download from the free music archive on a non-commercial attribution share alike basis. All views and opinions expressed in the show are solely the views and opinions of the person who said them. All celebrity voices, if any, were impersonated and done so poorly.